Anyway, all right, so we'll get started here. So welcome, everybody, and our meeting is scheduled to go on to, technically we should be done by 7:15, all right? So let's see if we can do it, but we are here till 8 at the very latest, okay? All right, so given that, let's start off with probation. Pat, how are you doing?
Very well.
Come on up. Let us go. Begin and present. You can sit at one of the...
Norman needs to give you an introduction.
Excuse
me. Is there a new schedule somewhere? I didn't... I got TCAT up first.
It's a purple color? Like this?
It's the same one as last week, right?
Yeah, you should have got it last week. Yeah.
Do you have a blue one?
No, that's the blue one.
Okay. Here's the purple.
Do we have an extra copy?
I can make copies.
That'd be great.
Anybody get a clean one?
Here's one in white.
Mine's not very clean.
Okay. Here's one in white with no printed.
Oh, I'm supposed to have that. Right. Yeah,
it's all right.
So, tonight, though, there's probation and then TCAT and public library. And by then, we'll have a schedule for you.
Okay.
And Norma has some new information.
Great. We want to start on page 67 of the under the OTR tab. Probably the easiest place to start.
All right.
I haven't replaced my pages yet. That's okay.
That's priority 7, Norma?
Yes, OTR number 54. You'll see on your desks you have a memo from me that has some attachments, a large chart, and some additional documents. These are the probation documents that have been edited. As you might recall, when Steve sent out a memo, when we produced this, the request book, we hadn't talked to a couple of departments, one of which was probation. The probation director didn't know she was going to be director when she scheduled her her vacation, so... We did some work without her, and when she came back, we did a little bit more work, and that's what these documents represent.
Okay.
OTR number 54, you see originally we had a reduction in target funding for a position, and then also a reduction in revenue. I'll wait just a minute until I'm sure everybody's...
OTR 54, you say?
Yes, OTR 54. It's the department's priority number 7.
Yes.
And I've given you replacement pages, Pam.
Right.
We originally just reduced the target and didn't replace any other funds. After talking with the department head, what happened was the ATI fees that they were using to cover this position are really one-time funds. They were their fees that had accumulated over some period of time. And they're not something that they're going to be able to recognize again next year, not in that amount. There'll be small amounts coming into the department. So we changed this to a one-time funding and reduced their target. So the position will be covered next year in the county administrator's recommendation, one time, and we covered the shortfall in revenue also with one-time funds. Let me make sure that everybody's with me on that one.
Yes.
That's okay.
Say it again.
Sure, I'll try. We started out reducing the target in the department's budget by $23,680. Those are funds that were accumulated as ATI fees. They really are one-time funds. They were showing in the base budget. Yeah, this would have come back next year because there wouldn't have been enough money to cover that position. And so instead, we're covering the position with fund balance, and we've reduced the department's target by that position. There's also this half a position was transferred over from workforce development when they lost their funds.
So So this is the 23680 as listed as one time here.
That's correct.
Okay. Is that position not going to expected to continue after that?
This position, and I'm sure Patricia will address it a little more. She's right here. But this position works on the reentry program, and we really don't have a reentry plan yet. So we thought it would be a good idea to one-time fund that while we're waiting to have a plan, waiting on a plan for.
Can I comment on that at this point in time?
Sure.
BPCA has just sent out an announcement that there's funding available for jail reentry programs, and so we'll be collaborating with DSS and some other people, probably the sheriff, to look into getting funding for that initiative. So if we're successful with that, I anticipate that half of the position will be covered with that funding for the following year.
So it's likely a position you want to continue, but there's likely going to be other funding.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I didn't hear you, Julian, sir.
I was just making sure I understood that the position is likely to be needed in the future, but there is equally likely to be other money for it.
Okay.
Anything else, Norma?
Yes. We made a couple of other changes. The OTR number 55, the department's priority number 8. Again, that one originally was recommended by the county administrator to reduce target for the professional nurse. After having a discussion with the director, we feel that we can one-time fund this as transition funding. OTR number 55, it's priority number 8.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. It looks as though it was requested as a $5,000 plus target.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is a new stuff.
I'm looking at the wrong pages. I'm sorry.
It's this one.
The original request was to replace funding that wasn't state funding that didn't come in for this position. It wasn't eligible for state funding.
Okay.
So you're saying you can count the whole 35?
I didn't
know
I was
saying. We're saying that we expect we can transition this position using one-time funding.
So it's a yes.
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
So is the wording that in your new pages to lead me to think that discussion with other entities has been successful and the position will continue in some other form?
I'm going to let Patricia answer.
I'm anticipating that this position will probably, through attrition, retirement, I'm thinking that for 2010, it won't be in the budget. That's the anticipation.
Thank you.
Any questions for Norma on these changes?
Just make sure I haven't missed any more. I think. And then the only other change on page 69 is the total OTR request now is $49,340. And that should be all of the replacement.
I'm sorry, what number was that?
Oh, on the bottom of page 69, on those sheets that we just gave you, the total has changed to $49,340. 40 rather than the 2,801 that was in there before. And most of that, well, all of it actually is one-time funded.
Okay, any other questions for Norma? If not, we'll just Patricia.
Norma, did you want to update the general revenue summary also, or should we do that at a different time?
I didn't want to take up the department's time. This will edit.
No worries.
We can go over that at the end, if that's okay?
General revenue
summary.
Yeah, we can go over it at the end. Sure. Okay.
All set?
Yes.
Okay. Well, being the new director on the block, I hope you're all kind and patient with me as I do my first presentation to you. I just wanted to briefly go over a little bit about our stats at the probation department, just for your edification. But we currently have approximately 685 criminal court supervision cases before us. 33% of those are DWI and vehicle and traffic law offenses, so approximately one-third we're dealing with alcohol-related offenses. 28% of those are property crimes, which are burglaries, grand larcenies, petty larcenies, forgeries, frauds, and criminal mischief offenses. 18% of the 685 are coercion crimes, which include robbery, sex offenses, weapons, charges, criminal contempt, and assaults. And then 12% are categorized in the other category, which are your, for example, endangering the welfare of a child, obstruction of governmental administration, resisting arrest, those kinds of offenses. So that's the breakdown of our criminal court supervision cases. We also have approximately 120 family court supervision cases, which include adjudicated juvenile delinquents, adjudicated persons in need of supervision. We also supervise support cases for the family court. We have approximately 44 support cases where we're actively getting people back to work so that they're paying for their children's child support, and also the specialty court of family treatment court is included in that number. In addition to that, we also have approximately 95 intake cases. Those are our pre-PINS and PINS diversion and JD diversion cases. So those are the breakdown of the numbers. What I'm here tonight to talk with you about is one OTR request. It's number 48 in my pages. I hope it's the same for you. And that is the position of systems analyst. This was formerly entitled microcomputer specialist. It was reclassed in 2008 by the former director to reflect the technical forensics aspect of the position and also the high degree of autonomy this person has in the department. This is the fourth year in a row that we've been requesting that this position be made part of Target, and I am respectfully requesting tonight that it again be made part of Target. I gave to Norma a very detailed description of this position, and I hope that all of you have had a chance to review it. It refers in the description to typical reports that the systems analyst is looking at. I have those in my possession if you would like to look at them. I didn't feel it quite appropriate to hand those out because it is internet-based material. Because much of this job is forensics in nature, it does require special training, and the systems analyst has been very extensively involved in attending training on sex offending behavior, what to look for in the computers and in the internet. It also requires a very detailed knowledge of probation practice so that she can put the two together. What this person does is she examines computers for pornography, images of victims, or other files that may be related to the crime for which the offender is on probation. She prepares a very detailed report for the supervising probation officer and also the treatment provider as to what was found in the computer and what kind of recommendations for monitoring is required for that person. She also does ongoing checking of the monitoring software for behavior that's not allowed, that may be restrictions to porn sites, chat rooms, MySpaces, places where offenders could be trolling for their next victim. The intent is to catch people before they proceed to actually doing the behavior. This technology restriction and monitoring program that we have in operation is appropriate not only for sex offense cases, but also juvenile cases who are going into MySpace accounts and doing all kinds of chatting and things in there, or on the kids who are on the computer late, or it's affecting their school. We can restrict their use to computers as well, and we have been doing that with some of the juveniles. It's also great for eBay fraud and forgery, gambling addiction, those kind of cases. I do want to point out that County Court under Judge Rowley is in the process of starting a new initiative, which is called Sex Offense Court. It's to begin in January of 2009. And probation is one of the stakeholders in the development of this court. It is a compliance-based court, and I anticipate that the systems analyst, this position, is going to be key to monitoring sex offenders' access to the Internet and restricting their use to the Internet. And this will be information that's going to be given to the court during weekly monitoring or biweekly monitoring for compliance with conditions of probation. This position also supports DPCA's emphasis on close monitoring of sex offenders. This has been coming down from the state that we put a lot of emphasis on this population. It is a high-risk population. It's also an integral piece to Prober, which is our database for probation. We are going to be converting to a brand new database called Caseload Explorer in January of 2009. It's a very robust system. The systems analyst is involved in training all the probation staff in the new database. It's also going to be interfaced with a couple of risk screening instruments that we use, one for youth and one for our adult criminal population. The systems analyst is also being used for ad hoc reports of data and statistics. She's currently involved now in doing some statistics for the day reporting program, which I'm sure Mr. Proto will be very pleased to hear. We are looking at recidivism. She's involved in that. And I just want to emphasize that ITS, I believe, supports this position because I don't believe that they, and this is nothing against ITS, but I just don't think that for the sex offender monitoring, I don't believe they have the expertise and the knowledge of the probation practice that's required for monitoring this population. So I'm here tonight to ask for your support to make this position part of Target. I believe that we have to keep up with the technology that's out there. Criminal behavior is the new venue, given the availability of the Internet. We need to make sure that we keep abreast of the technology that can assist us in protecting the community as well as rehabilitating the defendant. And I believe the systems analyst position supports this, and I ask for your support tonight. Thank you.
I have Pam and then Dooley.
I actually have two questions.
Yes.
And in our what we have here, it has a list of some of the responsibilities in that position. And it says assist in monitoring the inappropriate use of technology and the Internet by probationers convicted of sexual offenses and, the other pieces, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it says assist. Is there someone else who works on sex offender?
Well, the probation officers are responsible for supervising the offender. But the systems analyst is the person who's actually screening the computers, putting the time into looking at where the offender is going in the computer. She gives that information back to the probation officer. So it's a tool for supervision.
Okay. And what percentage of that person's job deals with this whole section here on sexual offenders, eBay fraud, cyber stalking, etc.? What percentage of their time about?
I would say it's a vast majority. I would say probably 50% at this point.
50%?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Dooley.
My question is for Steve, which is one of those kind of mysterious recommendations, either fully funded or eliminated. And it seems like you can't really be supportive of it if you think we might eliminate it. So I just wondered if you had anything else you wanted to add.
I just think there are two places, I think, in this budget where we've said similar things, where we think it's time for the legislature to make a decision that if you can afford to fund the position, it should be funded. Otherwise, stop. But the decision needs to be made.
So it doesn't mean that you think it could or should be eliminated. It doesn't contradict your recommendation.
Correct.
Okay.
Mike, and then Martha.
On the monitoring activities of this position, is it on a variety of venues or is it largely on their own personal computers?
It's the offender's personal computers.
Thank you.
Martha?
Yeah, this has come, it seems every year Kathy Lanthal would come and this would be the top priority. And there was always rollover over to fund it. So I take it that in your listing of your priorities for OTRs, this is being number one is...
It's still number one.
It's still number one. What kind of state aid is involved? Your description also says that even if ITS could sort of handle it, they wouldn't be able to get state aid, but being in probation, there's some chunk of it.
Well, we get the, I believe, 18% or it's dropping down to 17.5%, I believe. So,
okay. Yeah. So all the positions. Okay. Thank you.
Kelly?
Hi. I was listening, but I kind of got the sense that some of this is, if not mandated, it's encouraged by the state when
yes.
you were talking about
yes.
what you call probes monitoring or
yes.
something. Can you talk about that a little more? Because you know how we are about mandates.
Okay. Well, there's been a huge emphasis by Bob Macaron and the Division of Probation and Correctional Alternatives on this sex offending population. Sex offense court through OCA has been now talked a lot about, and they're doing a big push for compliance and containment courts for this population. So it's not going away, and I strongly believe that we have to keep up. I mean, sometimes offenders are smarter than we are, and we have to be able to keep up with what they're doing. And it does go in line with a lot of the kind of community uproar about sex offenders in the community and, you know, recent talk of, I guess, the local law that Lansing has passed about where sex offenders can live. It's all related, and I think we just need to be really monitoring and being a lot of scrutiny on this population.
Greg,
does that answer your question?
No.
I'm sorry.
I'm hearing somebody say that the position, about 50% of it, is devoted to some of the cyber stalking and the three things that Pam mentioned. And I'm trying to figure out in my mind how much of this is mandated or required and how much of it might be funded. This is the balance that we always have to do in our mind, because then we have to see the totals at the bottom and figure out where to get what from. That's where I'm going.
I see. I'm not sure how to answer that question.
I wasn't sure how to ask it, so it's all right.
Well, if the... Yeah. Is any of this job, and particularly the focus of the sex offender issues... it has the state mandated that we do this.
It's not a mandate, but it is strongly encouraged. But we do have to, the other part of the position is the database conversion. And we have to do that. I mean, that's coming down the pike. I mean, one minute we're in Prober, the next minute we're going to be in Caseload Explorer. And that's going to, you know, that's a very extensive training program for all of the POs to get on board with that. So that's a big requirement.
Okay. Greg, Mike Hattery, and then Martha.
Pat, sometimes we get feedback from constituents who are concerned about someone who's on the sex offender registry and lives in their neighborhood. Is it safe to assume that someone who may be on a sex offender registry living in the county is being supervised by your department and is having their electronic equipment or their computer monitored by this person? Is that a fair assumption to make, or does that only happen in certain circumstances?
Right now we have 23 registered sex offenders on supervision. So there's more than that in the community. Some are on parole. Some aren't under any supervision whatsoever. They're just required and mandated by law that they have to register for life, some of them. So it's not a safe assumption.
Okay, thank you.
Mike Addery?
Yeah.
Okay. And Martha.
Well, back to Prober and the database shift, in a sense, it's one of those mandated responsibilities. We have to comply, however it is we decide to comply and meet the new regs, then, you know, that's up to us. So so it's not like a Medicaid payment. We have to send a dollar out the door. And then the other part of this is it seems, I mean, this is one of those areas where the technology is changing so fast that this is, you know, as soon as somebody figures out how to follow a trail, there's some new program, new gimmick.
That's right. And I see this position as being the position that can keep abreast of the technology, can keep us informed of the new technology that's out there. I just really think that's crucial. I mean, that's how we've, you know, have the sobrieters, and that's how we have the electronic monitoring. I mean, that's all just another tool for supervision.
Okay.
Just one other thing?
All right. All right. I have Will, and then Kathy, and then Carol. Yep. And then we'll need to move on.
Yep. Thank you. So my understanding is that we currently have this, and we're trying to essentially build this into the target. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do you have some success stories where the existence of this technology has actually allowed you to intervene or catch somebody?
Okay. Well, we did have three people in the program, in the technology restriction and monitoring program. We now currently have two. One has been discharged from probation. They maxed out. But beyond that, we've had many more screenings of the computers and checking people's computers for where they have been. And the decision was made because there is a client-associated fee with the program. They opted to just have no internet access, and so that's basically what we're using the software for, is just restricting internet access altogether on their personal computer. But still, the systems analyst has to periodically go in and check to make sure they really are not getting into the computer and disobeying court mandates.
And presumably one can go to a public internet cafe or whatever, and you're not covered. This is only for their personal computer at home.
That's correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
Kathy?
I just noted that it says in the description under cause at the very bottom, it says this position is offset by state aid. Of course, that got my attention.
Correct.
So in the paragraph under effect, it goes into detail about how this, as you mentioned more succinctly and probably more clearly, is a way of helping local law enforcement to enforce and follow these offenders to prevent potential. And
well, that's the goal. I mean, we want to try to catch them before they act out. And it's great information for the treatment provider to have, because if we can let them know, look, that we think this person's heading for relapse behavior with another victim, I mean, that's certainly something that's addressed right away in treatment, and it's certainly something that's violatable. I mean, we can return them to court right away to prevent future offending.
Okay. Carol, last question.
I want to get something of an understanding, obviously not as much as I'd like, about what the administrator recommended, that this either be built into the target funding or eliminated. In your estimate, why didn't this one then make it into the target? Is the other stuff mandated, or you know, would there have been a way to work this into the target and drop something else instead?
When it got down to the end, we came in at 2.77. I think right now Norma's saying we're around 2.55. So there's roughly $150,000 to work with in target money before you reach the 3%. Now, there are several choices in this budget that are essentially in the same position. They're just saying these are important decisions that the legislature should make. I don't want to presume to make it, but there's money available to make your choices. So just leaving it up to you, I'm saying it's appropriate to make this decision at this point, because you either support this program or you don't, and having it one-time funded or multi-year funded for over 4 years is pushing the point. I mean, just you need to make a decision as to whether to fund it or not.
So, and then from the program director's perspective, why then didn't this make it into the base budget?
Well, as we said before, we couldn't meet with Pat because she was off on vacation because she didn't know she was going to be the director. And so there were a few situations like that. DSS is kind of the same situation. The finance person was not available. So rather than trying to make a decision with partial information, we just didn't spend the entire amount, and we left these positions. There are a couple questions for you to decide.
Okay. Well, I'd be open to the department coming back to us as we revisit maybe and
you know, if you have a chance to reflect on it, as to whether this is the position you'd put into the over target as opposed to the base. Does that make sense?
You're saying to administration or to?
To the program.
They're saying they want it to be
this
part of the target.
Yeah.
They want it as part of the base. It's the number one priority.
Because if it's not, it's been funded so far by through multi-year or through rollover funding, and so it hasn't been part of the base. So that's why it's coming as an over-target request. We have to vote to make it part of the target, which essentially makes it part of the base for future years.
Yeah. So what I'm asking is, if, as a new program director, is there something else they would take out of the base in order to put this in once they have a chance to reflect on it and are here?
And we did have that conversation with Pat, and that's why the supplemental pages were put in tonight. You'll see that there are quite a few changes, and the department worked with us very closely to try to identify any funding that could be used, and we think we've got them as tight as we can get them. So it's really down to this decision.
Okay. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, everyone.
Is it Pat or Patricia?
Pat's fine.
Are you sure? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Martha?
I know according to the schedule, we should have been done with probation 15 minutes ago, but
that's
I have other
right.
questions.
Yeah.
About other OTRs and all. Is that...
Okay. I mean, other questions about...
Pat, don't run away.
Pat, looks like we might have some more questions from Martha, yes.
Yeah.
About other OTRs.
Yeah, other OTRs. Oh. I'll try to be quick. The next one, OTR 49, professional services on internet monitoring, 2887. How does that relate to the one we just talked about?
That's on page 64 in your OTR pages.
Right. And 302 in the big book. And that is in the target.
This is the fee that we pay for the vendor for the software.
Oh, okay. That wasn't... Can I go ahead with...
Yes, yeah.
OTR 51 about fuel. This is to Steve. I'm confused about... I assume this was not changed in... Wait, did the new pages change?
No, I don't think this one changed. You didn't change this one, did you?
It doesn't start changing.
No, the new pages are no change. So I'm confused. It says the fuel line is over budget and you're recommending 20% increase in the target... Did the target go up 20%?
I did that. They're currently 5% over their budget right now in 2008. So it seemed very reasonable that they were asking for a 20% increase in their fuel. So it was recommended based on those facts.
Okay, so as target.
As target.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll catch up with you later on the last. Okay.
All right, thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Martha, did you just say as target?
On the fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the page says one time. So.
Right, but then...
I did fuel replace here. That, so if it didn't... Okay. If I didn't print that replacement page in the buff, it is in the white pages...
Okay.
Because we started out one time because we didn't have enough money to cover everything, and we were able to put target in for that. That was very necessary.
Okay, TCAT, Joe, how you doing? Congratulations on the negotiations. That was cool.
Huh?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I know it's fine. Yeah, I think all the seats will soon be taken, so you'd have to sit on someone's lap. If you wanted to sit down.
There's plenty of seats on the TCAT bus.
Especially between 10 and 3.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead, Joe.
Want me to start?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Since our budget presentation was well attended back in July, I just want to build off from the presentation on a couple updates. I was a little bit nervous at the presentation at the end. There weren't any questions or very few, but I was assured after the meeting that it was very straightforward. So Moving forward, as you're all aware, the governor had some recent cuts. It did affect the world of public transportation, more specifically the Upstate Formula Group, which TCAT's a member of. We're calculating a cut starting this month going forward, 2008, roughly $20,000. And 2009, the best that I can calculate is about $40,000. We're still a little bit nervous that more cuts are coming, but that's the first round, and that's what we have. Our fuel, unfortunately, our buses do use a lot of fuel. I was looking at the stats today. We're still averaging for the year in the high $3, almost $4 range. We did see a little relief as everyone has felt at the pumps recently, but latest deliveries are creeping back up, so we're still having an overrun this year. As you remember, we budgeted $3 a gallon for 2008, and we consume roughly 365,000 gallons a year, so even being off a dollar is substantial. We're taking that out of this year's fund balance, which drops us dangerously low in the $300,000 to $400,000 range. Our target, according to our auditors, is roughly 10% of our budget, which this year's $12 million. So our budget for, or our target for our fund balance should be about $1.2 million. As you can see, $400,000 is not close to that. Some good news. I'm sure you've all seen our 50-cent fare promotion. For the first couple of months, we were tracking it very carefully. We were realizing a 30% plus increase in ridership at those times. It's the off-peak times. due to the gasoline prices, our peak time use in a lot of areas is at capacity, and that's the logic mainly behind the off-peak time, knowing that we have some space for those folks. We're currently working on a survey whereby we will physically get on the buses, start talking to people, and find out such questions as, why did you choose to ride during the off-peak time? We're trying to answer the question moving forward. Do we have new riders? Do we have existing riders that have changed their travel patterns? Or what is the shift in ridership? So we are starting that very soon, and hopefully we'll get good survey results to better analyze the question. Do we have new folks, which the target was all about, hoping we get some new people on our bus, or do we have a shift? And we'll be working on that over the next few months. And I talked about our fund balance. I'm personally very nervous with a $12 million budget, having a reserve of only $400,000. And I'm hoping you can see where we are. We can't control our fuel price. And moving forward, I just hope that everyone supports our budget, $75,000 additional budget request this year. That's all I have.
Okay, questions? Kathy and then Martha.
Well, I'll just start it off by saying, hi, Joe. I noticed in the book there's a transportation grant right after this one, and I wondered if you could talk for a minute about the collaborative efforts between TCAT and the county to have more flexible transit for county and maybe outside of county residents who are traveling for work and stuff like that.
I'm not sure.
Flexible service and van pools and things like that are some of the things that, as a TCAT board member, I know we've discussed as a way to address the county's transportation needs. And I've been real impressed with your leadership around helping TCAT as an organization respond to those needs. And I just wondered if you could talk about that with respect to how we're dealing with rising gasoline prices as an organization and trying to help individuals in the county deal with rising gasoline prices and their transportation needs.
Yeah, the one service you just brought up, the van pool service, it's been a little bit of a challenge at TCAT given it's the first such program in New York State. Basically, the idea is to have a van, a 15-passenger van, picking up a group of people and transporting them to mainly to their jobs. We just issued the RFP for that program, I believe, today. And the hopes there, in my mind, it's going to help those folks that are looking for ways to beat the fuel price that we just financially can't do with a big 40-foot bus. And to date, we've had over 200-plus requests from people interested in that program. We're in constant contact with those people, letting them know our current progress. And it will be, I hope, it'll be the first such program in New York State, which down the road in 2 years will receive federal funding, but the first 2 years we won't. And Cornell has graciously agreed to help us with that the first 2 years. And then moving forward, we will receive additional federal funding for it. So it's been a little painful progress, given it's the first in New York State. But I think we're on the right track now. And we're hoping to kick that off the end of this year. And I think the target right now is the beginning of December. So as one of the stresses at TCAT that we're seeing, and I receive all emails from customers, we constantly get requests from people saying, help me out. We want to get to Ithaca. The gas price is X. It's costing me $200-$400 a month. Can TCAT help us out? And I think the vanpool will help a lot of people. So that's one avenue.
Thanks. Martha and then Frank.
Question for Joe and then Steve. Joe, just to get this straight, you said you've just gotten information about a $20,000 cut in 08.
Right.
And $40,000 cut during 09.
Right.
From the state money.
Right.
Okay. Thanks. And Steve, I'm confused on page 261 of the big book. Your recommendation is for the whole 75066 as target, but the explanation is that the allocation is based on an estimate of what the city's planning to fund. You've provided 5% target to support operations and 5% one time for the fund balance, but here it's all target, so I'm confused.
Okay, that was the transition that happened. At one point, we had a communication from the city that they weren't going to support the full request, and so what we were recommending is that if that was the case, if one of the partners said no to, let's say, 50%, we were saying to the legislature, at least put one-time money in to restore the fund balance, because I think Joe's exactly right. It can't operate with that low a fund balance. That's extremely dangerous. So we're trying to encourage full support.
Okay, this 75 is target, though.
Correct. We're saying that that's an appropriate request, and we were able to support it in the end. The comments that were there were where we were halfway through the process. We didn't clean it up.
And if the city only provides half of the request, you're saying we could kind of get around the partnership? Don't tell the city.
No, I would suggest to the city to do the same thing. If they can't support the full amount on an ongoing basis,
I see. Then,
I think it's very dangerous for TCAT to operate at that low amount of reserve. Okay. The variables. Remember last year we gave you the advice that gas wasn't going to go up over $3, and so we shouldn't fund them for the full amount. And we were so intelligent and so right. I think you should follow us again.
Thank you.
Frank.
Actually, Martha and I are on the same path there.
All right.
It's crazy.
I know,
it's scary, isn't it?
I don't know.
The way that it's funded, Joe, could you, because we have a couple of new board members here, can you remind this board about the three-way contribution and what the effect is if one partner, well, we don't call them partners anymore, but if one entity decides not to fund at the suggested level, what the reaction is and what the fallout could be, and then lead into Steve's comment.
Well, the process takes place every year at this time, and the county, the city, and Cornell, we present a certain percent increase. Last year, for example, is a good example. Steve's right on a recommendation last year. Came into November, and the city at their last meeting decided to give TCAT 4.5%. So what, in effect, that did was everybody, the Cornell and the county, automatically contributed 4.5. So we go with the lowest of the three. I have to add a wrinkle just so everyone's clear this year. That's still true. And the other variable this year, when you look in our budget package, is Cornell has also agreed upon contributing that same percent to their volume discount program. So in a sense, it's a four-prong percent this year. I don't want to confuse your question, Frank, but I want to make sure this year that we insert that as well. So whatever the county and city and Cornell agree upon, that same percentage will be applied to the volume discount program.
Okay.
So the effect could be if one of the entities decides to underfund,
correct,
Cornell is not going to step in and make up the entire difference. They will only contribute that fourth piece based
exactly
on the percentage.
Right.
Yeah. But nonetheless, the effect of one partner saying we're only going to fund at 3% instead of what's being asked for, that reduces the other two partners' shares automatically. So we're budgeting, assuming it goes down to 5, just hypothetically.
Right.
The effect to TCAT is a loss of $125,000, and Cornell is not going to step in and make up that much on the volume discount.
Mike and then Martha.
Well, this is going to go to Frank or yourself, I guess. So who makes up that 4.5%? Like, who comes up with that number?
At this point, no one.
We do service.
It's lost. We've been, if you don't mind, Nathan.
Yeah, go ahead.
Pam chairs the operations committee for TCAT. I mean, one of the things we've been looking at, we have people screaming for more service for all of the reasons you heard tonight, because the cost of gas to them is up as well. They want extended routes. They want service to run later at night so they can get to the library and they can get around a little wherever, get to work, get home from work. But yet, that all costs money because you still have to pay a driver. Pam can describe this better than I. But if we don't fund it at the level that's being asked for, we may have to look at, sad to say, trimming back routes, which is not where we want to go, where the TCAT board wants to go. We've tried other methods, the reduced fare, and that has picked up some ridership, thank goodness. Ithaca College, we're out trying to raise additional funds. I mean, Pam's been leading the charge on some of that, with meeting with different other municipalities to kick in some additional funding, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but there's at least one municipality that has thought about throwing in some additional funds, but their budget, isn't confirmed yet either. So who makes up the difference? We may end up seeing it suffer in service. Not a pleasant undertaking. But
well, not the difference is what I'm talking about, is the actual number. I mean, if you're telling me that TCAT is saying we need 4.5%, and if we don't get it, then we're going to lose this money, well, no other department gets that kind of leeway. You know, if another department came in and said, well, we need 4.5%, and you better give it to us, you would have a real problem with that. So,
A couple of years ago, Mike, we suffered under this because one of the entities backed out at the last minute, and Joe began to describe that, and it was scrambling at the last minute to try to make up that shortfall, and we didn't make it up. TCAT, from the very beginning, when it was simply an operations committee, TCAT has never had a lush fund balance at all. As a matter of fact, it's not had a fund balance. It didn't have a fund balance for a couple of years. And I keep saying this, but let me say it again. Cornell has stepped up over the years and funded an additional amount of money, so that has been paid off now, just so the service could continue to operate. If indeed it comes down to one partner not funding it, I thought it was appropriate for you to know what the fallout of that was. Mm-hmm. The way that the partnership is arranged and the way that the 501c3 is arranged is that any one of them can underfund, and that transcends to a cut from the other two. It's not a threat. It's a reality. It's the way that the entire service works. Joe, maybe you can, or Pam or Kathy, please.
I have Martha and then Pam.
I
I'm sorry I didn't get to the budget presentation. I probably would understand this if I had. But so do I understand in the description here, in addition to the loss of from the county and the partners, since the Cornell University volume discount program has also agreed to increase their contribution by the partner share increase, an additional $226,000 will be lost. Does that mean that we're now looking at four quarters and Cornell's paying two quarters, or is everybody paying a third but Cornell's paying an extra, so like Cornell's paying two-thirds, the city pays a third, and we pay a third?
Well, the increase on the volume discount program is different. It's totally separate than the city-county Cornell partners share. Their program's roughly $2.2 million. So, big number. You add 5% to that, that's a big number. Whereas the partner share is $750,000, $800,000. All I'm saying is whatever the percent that the three partners agree upon, the CU volume discount program will go up that same exact number.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Pam, and then we need to move on.
Right. I guess that I just wanted to add here that the TCAD is a little bit different than one of our own departments. I mean, in a sense, it's similar in that we know if our departments, what we are budgeting for our departments, if we cut a position or whatever, we can find out. There will certainly be a change in the kinds of services that we can provide. And I think TCATS is just on a little bit broader scale for the most part, and it is an organization that it runs on a very tight budget, as you're hearing. And so the increases are, you can look at them, and they're very understandable. There's no hidden pieces in this budget. And I also think that there is with us a commitment to having a public transportation system. And at a time when people are having a harder time paying gasoline to fill their vehicles and getting to work, and everything else is going up, it's exactly the time when public transportation is needed, and we need to provide as good a transportation system as we possibly can afford. And so if the county and the city and Cornell cannot come up with a full amount, as Frank was saying, or maybe it was Kathy was saying, that well, there has to be an adjustment in terms of the services that our TCAT can provide, and that can either take the form of an increase in fares or a decrease in service. And right now, we have a fantastic increase in the demand for riders from the rural areas. That's been the largest group, and that makes sense. People trying to get to work every day and get back home, they are the ones who are really taking it hard with these fuel increases. So it's really, in some ways, a very fragile balance at this point. I mean, we are continuing to look for other ways to help us fund this. But I think it's not a secret that public transportations are not a profit-making enterprise, and that it requires this kind of subsidy. And I think we have to continue to remind ourselves the value of having this kind of public transportation system is to our constituents. I think it's really important.
With that, we will thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you.
For your presentation. All right. We are 30 minutes behind schedule. I'm not going to ask any presenters to cut their presentations short, but I will stick now to the time limit. So we will be discussing the public library now for the next half hour, max 30 minutes, and I'll be sticking to that time limit. After that, we have workforce development. So it'll go public library, workforce development, and do people want to have a break? You do want to have a break? All right, we'll have just a short break. We'll just do a five-minute break and just a stretch, and then we will continue with cooperative extension and then the soil and water conservation district. So with that, I believe, Janet, you have a DVD, don't you?
I do. I'd like to thank you very much for being here tonight and letting some of our users speak about the library first before I talk about our budget.
Now, I did make the exception for a DVD because this presentation was meant to be shown during the Public Library's budget presentation earlier in the year, and they weren't able to do it then, so I'm allowing it now. If any other department wants to make a DVD, they very well can do that. Okay. All right. Oh, and Janet, make sure you use a mic when you're speaking as well.
Janet, why don't you take that out? Why don't you take the mic?
I think you're okay.
And you take that one. Right on the stand.
I have an audit committee. Oh, yes, ma'am. Okay.
Hey, Jim.
Again, we have no signal.
Newspaper, and so I enjoy spending time doing that. to find an armchair, and I read the magazines a lot.
So you saw a lot of e-books, and my wife uses a lot of DVDs and videos.
Nonfiction and fiction, we use it to check out music.
I go to the reference desk. They're always very helpful, and they usually have exactly what I'm looking for.
You just see people here who I think they're just having rough times, and they realize the community, this place is open for the community.
Well, I was looking forward, because this was like my hub. I would come down every day, use the internet, look for jobs, and just have a place to be, and then do whatever I need to do downtown.
One thing about a library is a place you can come to and keep learning all the time.
When I was little, I used to come here and play learning system games.
I take civil servant exams, like for a police officer. I get the books here.
I feel like the best way to improve your English is to read lots of books.
I've come here to get DVDs and stuff, instructional for all sorts of review, you know, for EMT tests.
From the first grade on, I would just check books out and read them, and I spent a lot of my free time reading books, and in fact, I teach English right now. Frequently, I use the library down here for tutoring, doing both math and science, and this is just like a really convenient meeting location. Made friends with lots of the librarians, pages, the desk clerks, so it's a part of my community.
I belong to the Comic Book Club of Ithaca, CBCI, and we usually meet in one of the back meeting rooms.
I've met a couple of people here, really interesting people.
We just had story time. Yeah.
TAG is the teen advisory group. We have a book club running. And also we help plan local teen events. For example, we just had a concert, and there's all this bar here, and looking at bulletin boards, and it feels more organic. The display cases they have out in the lobby area of this library, I always kind of look at those display cases to see what's new in the community that I can learn from.
I think there is something, I would even say holy, about a clean, well-lighted space, somewhere safe that where people respect you.
It's a peaceful place. It's kind of like a church in a way.
The library is a perfect place for me to be. And I'm just, when I'm here, I'm relaxed.
So you kind of, you listen to yourself, think, and meditate. So it's just kind of like a commiserating with all these people, you know, written books that are not here.
I think a lot of people just think about the library as books. And they don't really appreciate the resource that it is.
A place of huge intellectual freedom, and
it's really a blessing to have a library.
So the public library is a place that is an equalizer. It's the democratic equalizer. It provides equal access to information and the culture of the world.
And it's definitely one of the last holdouts of the old notion of commons.
And I think that we need to keep investing in the literacy of our communities.
A community that doesn't read is a community that doesn't think.
You can actually tell a lot about a community from the library. And this library shows the generous nature of this community. And
whatever money the library could give, whatever sources, I don't think any of it would ever be put to waste. I think it's a tremendous stimulus for the community. It provides a tremendous backbone for education for all cultures, classes, ethnic groups, whatever you want to call it. So it's really a wonderful example of democracy in action. It's a great place.
Okay. Thank you, Janet. That was very nice. All right, so we're going to our OTR pages 20 through 22, and in the big book, it's page starting on page 108. And we have exactly 20 minutes for this part, and I will cut it off at 20 minutes. All right. So, Janet, welcome.
Thank you so much, and thank you for watching the video. The reason that I showed it to you tonight was so that the people who use the library can speak to you about how important the library is. Almost exactly 8 years ago, in September 29th, this county legislature adopted a resolution purchasing the Woolworth property for the intention of renovating the space for the county library, and our community has benefited from that decision in uncountable ways. Just like many other communities throughout the United States, our library usage is up. Circulation of library materials is up by 4% over July of last year. The door count of visitors went up by 10% in July. And even though we're almost at full capacity with our internet service, that too increased by 11%. What accounts for these increases? As the Wall Street Journal headline read on September 2nd, "In economic bind, families turn to libraries." This phenomenon has been well documented by the American Library Association after the last recession in 2001, when they reported that library usage had risen sharply, and the same thing is happening today. For those who are struggling to make ends meet and can't afford to buy books, pay for magazine subscriptions, maintain a Netflix account, or have a home internet connection, our library serves as a one-stop source for all of this. Families can choose from over 65,000 children's books. Seniors with the time to browse through magazines and newspapers can choose from among our 300 print subscriptions. Our library cannot offer jobs to all of those who are unemployed, but we can offer help in finding jobs, writing resumes, and help with taking tests. Three of our computer workstations contain word processing, spreadsheet, and PowerPoint software. The library does not take a position on political campaigns, but you can find autobiographies of both John McCain and Barack Obama at our library. You can read books which support both your favorite candidate and those which oppose your favorite candidate. And you can attend a political debate in which our community meeting room on October 2nd, when Mike Ziegler will be debating Irene Stein. Well, you can search the internet and find a list of books which Sarah Palin has reputedly censored. You can find from our professional librarians how to determine whether the list is real or bogus, because our librarians are experienced internet searchers, and as an aside, the list is bogus. Our library cannot provide health insurance coverage or medical treatments, but we can provide up-to-date resources, both print and online, which help people with their health and medical issues. When a doctor gives you a choice of treatments and leaves it up to you to decide, you can be confident that the information the library provides is accurate, reliable, and up to date. In partnership with the County Health Department, we are an immunization site, a Red Cross blood drive site, and just recently collected boxes of food from our employees in connection with the county's United Way food drive. Our library does not rescue cats or dogs, but working in partnership with our local SPCA, we sponsored an Adopt a Pet Day at the library where 8 orphans found homes. The library can assure you that your children will be accepted into the college of your choice, but as you saw from the letter that I forwarded to you a few weeks ago from Chris Fontana, using the resources of our library and our teen librarian Adele Lees, her daughter Katie obtained more than $110,000 worth of scholarships and indeed was accepted into her first choice college. Our library cannot on its own solve the nation's energy problems or create a sustainable environment, but we can and do respond to requests for information about alternative forms of energy, such as wind, cooking oil, hydro, and solar power. Our library can't provide food vouchers for those who are hungry, but we are able to respond to those who are attempting to control their weekly food budget by offering a wide selection of books on how to grow your own food. You know, Victory Gardens are back, but it seems that we've forgotten exactly how to grow one of those. Our library has one of the most extensive collections of cooking and gardening books in upstate New York. And I could go on and on. I won't. I just want to make sure that you know we are very proud to be certified by the Tompkins County Worker Center as an employer which pays a living wage to all of our employees. So you can see why I say that you can be immensely proud of your public library and the role that it plays in the community. And on behalf of all of us at the library, we want to say thank you for making that happen. County Administrator Steve Witcher's budget recommendations for the library covers four areas, and I'd like to briefly review those with you. Our maintenance of effort request, which we are required to do because we're not a county department, requires us to ask you for our contractual salary and benefit increases along with vendor increases, which allow us to maintain the same level of service in 2009 as in 2008. And we are really thrilled that that was recommended for full funding. Thank you very much, Steve. Our second over-target request covers our desire to respond to the high demand for library materials and the staff that's needed to select, order, receive, catalog, circulate, and reshelve them. Our acquisitions budget continues to be insufficient to meet both the ongoing demand for new items, but to also replace worn out and damaged items. My fear is that people come into the library and they see a beautiful place, a sacred place, a holy place, but when they go to the shelf, they find books that are dirty, that are out of date, that need repair. And we need to continue to maintain the high level of quality in our acquisitions budget that we do and everything else that we do at the library. Included in this over-target request was our request that you continue as permanent the $25,000 one-time request that you have allocated to us this year for acquisitions. This request has become even more important as we have just learned that the Friends of the Library will be reducing their allocation to us in 2009 by $10,000. So the loss of that money along with the loss of this one-time money would mean that our acquisitions budget would lose about $35,000 in 2009. But what's really important, and this message came across to those of you who came to our pre-budget hearing in June, is the fact that the library has been chronically understaffed. It's been understaffed since we moved into the new library. We have hired an outside consultant to make sure that that assessment by us and our staff is correct. And yes, indeed, the consultant that you hired, or that not you hired, but that you funded, indeed has said, yes, the library, despite all of the different steps that we can take to streamline, still needs more staff. So the request that we submitted to you, again, we thank Steve Witcher for recommending a third of that request. Our feeling right now is that it will all be directed towards staff. That's the most important thing that we can do. If there is additional money in your fund balance and in your reserve fund, continuing the $25,000 for the acquisitions budget would be deeply appreciated. Our technology plays a very significant part in the life of our library, not only in providing usage and support for all the staff who work there, and our whole entire infrastructure is based on making sure we have up-to-date computers and software, but the users who come to the library need those computers. They need computers that function and are up-to-date. Right now, we're on a four-year scheduled replacement. That's unlike the two major educational institutions in this county, which are on three-year cycles. We are puzzled by the recommendation of the county administrator to only fund the replacement of 20 of those computers, or 21 of those computers, rather than the full amount as one-time funding. That has always been something that we've been very proud of, that our request for technology replacement has been fully funded out of one-time money. We're also puzzled by, in that particular OTR, the fact that the request for our phone system, which has reached its end of life, the company's actually called, it's at the end of life cycle. They will not support it anymore. It's the portable phones that we use to reach our security guard. We use the portable phones to reach our on-call pages, and we use those phones to reach the cleaners. And in 2009, those are simply just either not going to work or won't be supported. So we are hoping that you will take another look at that budget request, and if there is, again, money in your one-time budget, we would deeply appreciate a reconsideration of the full amount. Finally, Sunday library services. For those of you who were not at the June pre-budget meeting, we did make a creative attempt to find a way to permanently fund Sunday hours by approaching the town of Ithaca and the city of Ithaca with a proposal that we share the cost of Sunday hours on a permanent basis. There's three different ways that we propose that we split the cost. One is a three-way split evenly, everybody $20,000. Another way is based on usage. And a third way was based on adopting a month, so that one municipality would have January and February. Another municipality would sponsor, if you will, March and April and so forth. For the purposes of presenting this tonight, and because we don't know what the other municipalities are, we just chose the easy one, which is divide the $60,000 in three ways. That was not recommended by the county administrator for funding. His rationale was it's a new initiative. Actually, we've been open on Sunday since 1995, but we've been able to do that with soft money, which is disappearing. Our ability, as I told you, the Friends of the Libraries grant for 2009 will be down, and our fundraising is also not at the level we'd like to be in 2009. So it makes it hard for us to leverage support with other municipalities if we can't see the county's contribution at that point. So thank you very much, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. That was very comprehensive. Frank and Carol.
Thanks, Nathan. Janet, can you say if there's been two questions? Can you say if there's been any anticipated impact on the library with the state pullback?
Yes.
And also on the Sunday, I have a question for you about
okay.
the Sunday hour.
The state has cut library funding, which is really a very it's a deep cut for us because library funding in New York State hasn't increased for a decade. So when you start, we've lost ground for a decade. The impact on our library, however, is yet to be determined because they have not released numbers showing the impact on library systems, which is the Finger Lakes Library System, which will then pass that cut on to us or absorb it. So at this point, it could be a few thousand dollars. So something that we would be able to absorb in year one, probably not continue on.
Are they, in spite of that, do you anticipate that they're still requiring you to meet those
yes.
parameters? They haven't lowered the threshold.
No.
Okay. On the Sunday hours,
mm-hmm.
Because we're tying into the TCAT business about trying to encourage people to use the bus at certain other times, do you have a head count as to what the numbers of patrons have been on
yes.
Sunday only?
Yes. Roughly, our door count runs about 700 to 800 people in 4 hours, sometimes 1,000.
Would the increase or the use of the maintenance of effort money, does that include stretching any of that personnel to help out on Sunday?
Not really. The maintenance of effort is business as usual, 55 hours a week. The Sunday hours right now is coming from other sources.
Cool. Okay. Thanks.
I had Carol and then Martha.
I just want to know the reason for the Friends of the Library decreased. Is mm-hmm. that did they have fewer funds
yes.
or are they expanding other things?
No, they have. We are highly dependent on the success of the book sale. The book sale is not successful, then their funding is not successful. What I've been told is that fewer book dealers want to drive up from Florida to go to the book sale. So their first day sales in the spring were down, and then you never quite recover from that first day loss. They were also dipping into the fund balance last year to meet their commitment to the library, so they can't continue to fund us and other agencies the way they have been without putting themselves in harm's way as well. If they're wildly successful in the fall, and I encourage you all to go, that may be revisited, but I think they're going to be looking at restoring their fund balance at the same time.
And then the Sunday library service, is that fourth or whatever, last
that's,
of the
yes.
OTR requests?
Yes.
Because
mm-hmm.
that's where you would put it in
yes.
priority?
Yes. Not that it's... There are priorities 5 through 10 that we didn't submit
right.
to you.
Right. Okay. And then also, let me ask you about use of volunteers.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Can you say anything about sort of how that's, what you're finding in terms of volunteers and how you're able to make use of them?
Well, the county legislature has funded a volunteer coordinator full-time that will end in 2009, so we'll be back to you with a fuller description of what that full-time volunteer coordinator has been able to accomplish. We have hundreds of volunteers, about 100 on a regular basis every week. They do a lot of things that we used to have paid staff doing. We've just resolved a collective bargaining issue with regard to what volunteers can actually do in the library. It now includes the ability for volunteers to reshelve books. So we're really happy, first of all, we're really happy that our collective bargaining with the support staff has been resolved, and it also frees up more things for our volunteers to do. The challenge with volunteers, number one, is we get a lot of short-term volunteers. They do community service. They're only here for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. They're students. So what we're short of is a volunteer that will stay with us over a long period of time.
Volunteer. Thanks. Martha, and then Will. Now we have 5 more minutes for this discussion.
On OTR6, the Sunday hours, it's I called Janet because the numbers were very confusing. So would you want to go over that again?
Sure.
Briefly?
Sure.
And the request to us is for 20. On to that.
The cost to open up on Sundays is, in 2008 dollars, about $60,000. Everything will go up a little bit in 2009. We didn't know what those numbers were. Part of the cost to be open on Sundays is a surcharge from facilities. County facilities charges us, and we have to pay the county facilities to have the lights on and the heat on. So the $8,500 that's mentioned in that OTR request is the dollar amount that is required for the utilities cost. If you were to approve that $20,000, you could allocate it to the library, and then we would turn around and allocate $8,500 to the facilities budget. Or you could separate it and say $8,500 to the facilities budget and $11,500 to the library's budget. So that's how those numbers are relating.
Will?
Just a little more on that. You said that you just resolved the contract.
Yes.
Do you actually have a new contract signed with support
yes.
staff?
Yes. Okay. We have two contracts. One has been signed. It's with the support staff, the major and largest group, United Auto Workers Local 2300. We're very pleased with the outcome of that. It took a long time, but we do have a settlement, and the salary and wages are comparable, if not identical, to what county employees are receiving. Our other unit is the Professional Staff Association, and tomorrow is our third day of mediation with that group. So we still have not resolved the contract that expired in December of 2005.
Carol?
Yeah, can I say something about usership or
yes.
count on Sundays?
Yes.
How does the use on Sundays compare to the other
Sundays
days?
Sundays is measured as, you can, the door count is one way of measuring it, and as I told you, it was maybe 700, 800, 900 visitors. But in terms of circulation per hour, it's the second highest day of the week compared, the highest is Saturdays, where circulation per hour reaches its zenith.
Okay. Any other questions for Janet? Julie?
I can't remember all of the presentation that we went to earlier. Did that include your priorities 5 through 10, which are not here?
No, it did not.
Okay, so that you're just not telling us those. I'd be interested in having them on a sheet of paper, nonetheless.
And I think they're not my priorities. I think we look at user demand and what people ask us for. They ask us for weekend hours beyond closing at 5 o'clock on Fridays and Saturdays. They continually ask us for the Sundays, but additional weekend hours is a high priority. They want their things put back on the shelf faster. They want their books checked in faster. All of those priorities are listed in their OTRs.
Okay, I have Mike and then Martha. Oh, I'm sorry.
In the contract that you settled, does that give volunteers any more leeway to do things than they could do previously?
Yes, it does. In our previous contract, volunteers were not allowed to reshelve books, and now that's been resolved creatively, I would say, and so we're okay with that now.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Mike and Martha, and you each have 40 seconds.
In the contract, was the overtime on the weekends issue resolved? So the work week, if someone worked on Saturdays but then took like Tuesday and Wednesday off, was that resolved?
Well, what's resolved in terms of weekend compensation for the support staff is that Saturdays in the summer are worked at straight time. And before it was time and a half. So that one was resolved. We did not address Sunday hours because we compared our library with other comparable libraries and realized that the competition or the comparable libraries were all paying time and a half on Sundays. So we decided not to push on that because it seemed as though that was kind of what was happening in other libraries. So I think we made progress on that issue. And for every step forward you take, you try the next time and the next time, as you know. So.
Great, that was 50 seconds. So, Martha, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be too pushy.
Okay, OTR4, the library collection, which is books plus staff. If you were to get, instead of $145,000, $50,000, mm-hmm. did I hear you say that your priority would be staff?
Staff, definitely. No question.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you. And look, we have 7 seconds.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
right.
it. Always available to answer questions via email or call me if you have any further questions.
All right. Thank you very much, Jen. And that DVD was very nice. Okay. So, Julia, how are you?
Great.
Good. And so you have until 6:45 for your presentation, so 15 minutes.
Okay, great. First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about workforce development today, as well as talk about our over-target request. The first thing I want to tell you is that workforce development is becoming crucial to community and economic development. Communities around the country are beginning to realize that they cannot have economic development without workforce development. I want to give you a couple of examples. I'm sorry, I'm nervous. I want to give you a couple of examples of recent visits to businesses in Tompkins County that really underscores that point.
Julia, you might want to bring your mic down a little bit. Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks, since the beginning of August, TCAD, in collaboration with the Workforce Investment Board, has had an ambitious schedule for what we call business retention and expansion visits. Our plan between August and December was to visit with over 40 of our most important businesses, but identified based on size, wages that they pay, growing sectors in the economy, et cetera. Over half of those visits have been completed, as I said, since August. And what we're hearing from those businesses is that one of the most crucial issues that they're having is workforce development. As a matter of fact, on Thursday morning last week, Heather Filiberto and I were at a local business that has done well over the years. And what they informed us of was that in 2008, they moved their entire accounting functions to Connecticut because they were unable to get the accounting workforce that they needed. They tried for over a year to get a controller without success. They identified that in Connecticut they were more likely to find what they needed, and in fact they were able to find what they needed. They also said that they had moved their marketing and sales functions to Las Vegas for two reasons. One was to be closer to their market, so that was important, but also they said it was like an 80-20 split. 20% of the reason was they couldn't get the marketing and sales workforce that they needed. Now their manufacturing functions continue to stay here, but those types of professional positions are crucial for us to retain because, as you know, frequently those are the higher paying positions. During these visits, over half of the businesses that we've already visited have said that the lack of a skilled workforce has impacted their ability to grow in this area, as well as the example I gave you. They are not able to retain some of the functions here because of a lack of a skilled workforce. In July, Martha Armstrong and I were here talking to you about the recent results of the Shimura study, the project that we worked on to look at what is the real state of the workforce in Tompkins County. As you heard then, There are some very crucial issues we're beginning to identify. In terms of those issues, the top five areas that we're going to be focusing on. As we mentioned in July, we have convened a workforce strategy steering group. They've met several times since the July session. One of the outcomes of that was that it was crucial that we include the school districts, obviously, in that conversation. I'm happy to say at the end of this month, on September 30th, the Workforce Investment Board meeting will be a combination of the superintendents of the eight school districts in the TST BOCES catchment area, as well as some of them are also bringing their high school and middle slash junior high principals to that meeting to begin to talk about both the environment and climate that school districts are working under when it comes to workforce development and working with our young people, as well as the environment and climate that businesses are working under in their need for a skilled workforce. That's what we consider a beginning dialogue with the school districts in hopes that we can come up with some common problems that we can work on together. So those are some of the early outcomes of the workforce strategy conversations. We decided to jump the gun on that, even though the report isn't issued, because I think you could all agree that the school districts are an important part of the picture. Just to go back for a minute to the July conversation, I'm thinking that between July and September, none of those many issues that were identified in the report have gone away. If anything, with the unemployment rate going up, we are seeing increases in individuals accessing the center that are in need of unemployment insurance. One of our chief roles at the One Stop Center, and Diane's going to be talking about the One Stop Center itself, but one of our chief roles is what we call rapid response with individuals who've been laid off or downsized. Our goal is to get them back into the labor market as quickly as possible. I want to talk to you a little bit about the difference between the Workforce Investment Board and the Office of Employment and Training, because that is by far the most the question that we get the most. First off, I want to say Diane does not work for me. She is not part of the Workforce Investment Board. She is a contractor. Much like other outside agencies, outside of the county agencies that we have as contractors, Diane is a contractor. The Workforce Investment Board itself's role is to identify needs, to convene agencies, to collaborate on grant applications. Let me give you a couple of examples. When we look at the workforce strategy, the issues that were identified in the July report, it's clear when you have you have to have strategy to deal with many of the issues, or at least begin to tackle many of the issues. Sometimes what we do with we do many different things in order to begin to tackle those issues. One example would be convening. We find out that there is a possibility or that there is going to be a request for proposals issued either from the federal government or the state. Commonly, we would convene agencies that can apply for this funding and begin to talk to them about what we're hearing in the employer community, in the job seeker community, and working with those agencies to collaborate around that after identifying issues and problems and strategies, work with agencies around that to apply for that funding. Other types of things that we might do or that we do as part of that those functions. Sometimes it's as simple as, I think for years we've all known that there have been that there's been a lack of training programs for machinists in this area, and we constantly have heard of employers who say, I can't get skilled machinists, I can't grow my business, and as a result, I'm unable to hire the folks that I need. One of the things that we worked on in the last year was convening many of those same employers who regularly say we're having problems hiring folks and getting skilled machinists. We convened them. What we did was we convened them. We brought them together. We worked with them to identify what are the common basic skill sets that they were in need of. We brought in the community college, designed curriculum, worked with the employers and said, does this meet your needs? And are you willing to pay for this? And they said, yes, absolutely. We're willing to pay for this. And we brokered the cost of that between four employers that needed these skilled folks. Initially, that training program was designed to be for their current employees. Our goal this fall is to begin to bring individuals who are not currently working or are looking for skill upgrades into that training program so that we can prepare them for some of the jobs that these employers have. Another example. In the last couple of months, we had identified that there was a need in the hospitality and tourism industry to identify career ladders for individuals in that industry so we can work to train them and move them into progressively responsible and progressively higher paying positions. Again, in this instance, we convened a group with the strategic tourism planning folks. We pulled together the community college, designed curriculum, and came up with strategies related to that. And our hope is that the Strategic Tourism Planning Board budget would be funded in the Hospitality and Tourism Project with Workforce. And our goal is to move individuals up the career ladder in the hospitality and tourism industry to prepare them for better jobs.
Okay. We only have a few more minutes for discussion here. Julia, can you speak specifically to OTR 42, Sustainability of the Workforce Assessment
Yes.
Board?
Yes. Let me first say that I want you to know that our OTR request is for $71,264. Since the budget request was put in the last week, we have new information, and we're asking for $7,000 less. That would bring us to $64,264. And as I said, we've been able to identify expenses that we have been planning for that we won't have, and so we're requesting less funding. I also want to make clear to a lot of our newer board members that the Workforce Investment Board's request, OTR request, if it is not granted, the effect of that would be that we would be making a decision to merge the Tompkins County Workforce Investment Board with another Workforce Investment Board in our surrounding area. That would be a 3, 4, or 5 county Workforce Investment Board that we would be working with. The effect of that would be a loss of local control over the funding, where the training dollars go, where we focus on it, where the one-stop center is, whether we have a one-stop center and where it is located in the community. So there are some serious consequences to this decision. In 1999, Tompkins County made the decision to go with a single county workforce investment board after 2 times trying partnerships with multiple counties. Neither of those were successful. At this point, in 1999, we made that decision because Tompkins County's labor market is unique. If you look at the surrounding counties around us, we are nothing like them in terms of their needs and their labor market. And in our previous relationships with the multi-county consortiums, Tompkins County did not feel as though their needs were being met in those initiatives.
Martha?
Nathan, I'm going to ask that we have a little bit of extra time. We're looking
sure.
at elimination of a program, and we've got time at the end of the agenda. So I think the stuff that Julia went over was really important as background. And I would mention also that a couple of other pieces, this used to be a federally funded program, and it's been cut over the years, a little and then a lot and a little more. And So we sort of knew we were in this position, we were approaching this position, and here we are. Last year, we tried funding it through the IDA, and we're told that that was legal, that we weren't going to go to jail last year, but if we did it again, we maybe ought to watch out. So we've tried another way of funding this. And the idea of joining with another WIB, in other words, if we cut this program entirely, in order to get the federal training monies to come to the one-stop center, we have to have this planning function one way or another. If we had to join with Broom or Tioga or Schuyler, it not only makes our program less customized for our folks, but it actually would serve to decrease the total pot of money that comes to Central New York to these counties, because our relatively high employment rate or relatively low unemployment rate dilutes the apparent need. The need of all the counties in a particular WIB determines how much federal funding they get. So we would, and that's one reason that nobody really wanted us to join them either, because then we would have the effect of reducing the money that's available to the, whatever the counties are that are in that WIB. So it's a real issue. I talked to Heather Filiberto on Friday, and she said, and as people know, she used to work for our planning department. She now is a coordinator of the Empire Zone working at TCAD. So she's working every day with employers and employers who are looking for new employees, because the whole idea of the Empire Zone is to increase jobs, increase employment. She said they would not know what to do if they didn't have Julia in Julia's office. That they're really worried about this. They lean on Julia all the time. They have businesses that are looking for, as Julia already mentioned, looking for particular kinds of people, as well as sort of broad categories of people, and they really need this function to be in order to grow the businesses that we do have and to keep the employment that we do have in Tompkins County. Because if you don't, if there's a gap in a business, the whole business may go. So the other thing is that on the IDA, we often are looking at an applicant where there's an issue about diversity. Do they have a diversity plan? And as just happened with AESQ, they don't have a very diverse workforce, and they had no diversity plan. So we said, well, here's Julia's phone number. And, we often do that. We'll sort of recommend that they meet with Julia and work with her on strategies for recruitment and inclusion, and have gotten very good reports back from people's experience in getting that kind of support. So with that as my little speech, I want to ask Steve to explain on page, where is it?
57.
Thank you.
In the big book, it's 270.
The OTR is 57.
Thank you. Steve has recommended that this not be funded, and the explanation is the county cannot support this in the current fiscal climate. And since I heard that unemployment went up from in the threes to, I think, 4.1% in Tompkins County in the last period that they calculated it, could you explain? I mean, this is kind of exactly the time when you need this kind of service.
Okay, number one, you have to face the reality that this is a transfer from the federal and the state to the county in violation of the original agreement, which was that it would be a no-cost partnership with Tompkins County. And times change, things happen. But and from my perspective, I couldn't possibly support funding this in the initial round because of that transfer. So that said, when one looks at the challenges that we have in Tompkins County for employment, what's interesting about Tompkins County is we always have the lowest unemployment in the state, and we always have probably the highest underemployment in the state. So it's kind of a weird environment that we live in. What I have heard over and over and over again is that this economy has the capacity to grow a heck of a lot more than it is right now, and we have everything in place, and we have high demand for the services and the products that are being produced, but we haven't got the staffing to do it. And I've bumped into that over and over again. So, you know, again, I told you there are several places, two in particular in this budget, where I would say that if the money's there, it wasn't there when we were doing it, and I didn't have complete information, so I didn't want to give you a final recommendation. But this is one of the areas where I would say that, yeah, it makes sense to invest the money here. But recognizing that this is a violation of an original agreement with the feds and the state, and they really are making a choice here, but it's a worthwhile investment.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question from Frank. And by the way, I'm extending the discussion by 10 minutes, so we're going to end in 6 minutes by 6:55.
Okay, so I have 45 seconds.
No, you have 6 minutes. 6 minutes.
For those of you that don't recognize this cup, this is an original, it used to be called the Job Training Program and the PIC. This is a Cortland Tompkins Cayuga Consortium, and I have one from Broome County also. I was the representative to both of those, and Barbara Blanchard and I did that. When we decided to break away from Broome and start this on our own, the discussion that some of us had around this table was that TCAD would help step in and help guide this. Julia, at some point it probably would be helpful if you could share, not tonight, but maybe circulate a copy of your budget, because I think it would be helpful for all of us to see what else goes on through the program. What I'd like to know, maybe saying out or asking out loud, in the write-up, and I couldn't agree with Steve more that this is probably needed more than ever right now, but I think it would be good to show some of the successes that the program has had and where the placements have been, because you are working closely with TCAD and also with Heather. The comment under cause in our write-up, it says reductions in federal and state aid, blah, 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 coupled with limited competitive grant opportunities. So are we also witnessing a shrinking pool of grants for which we can apply?
When the Workforce Investment Board was first formed in the early 2000, 2001, say through 2003, until the point at which we started having budget shortfalls, the way the Workforce Investment Act works is the money goes from the federal government to the state, and the state is able to take 15% off the top of the grant for what's called state set-aside money. And the rest goes to local workforce investment areas in what's called formula funding. When the Workforce Investment Act first went into place and the state took their 15% set-aside, what they did frequently was released those funds through competitive grant opportunities out to workforce investment areas for special projects. And that was one of the ways that we were, with administrative funding attached, that was one of the ways that we were able to continue our functioning through the 2004 time frame, 2005. What happened was the state began keeping their state set-aside money for special projects within the state, as well as when we do get special projects now, there's no administrative funding attached to it. So in the last year, we have received over $175,000 in special project money, which we're responsible for contracting out to the Office of Employment and Training in both of those cases, but there was no administrative funding attached to those grants. So it flows through our budget as program funds directly to the Office of Employment and Training. So that's the limited competitive grant opportunities. When they are out there, there's no admin funding associated with them. The state is retaining the administration funding for themselves.
And one follow-up quickly.
Sure.
Are we to assume, even though you're only asking for this money for 2009, are we to assume that we ought to plan on this long term?
Our original request was for target funding.
Yeah, this is target.
Yeah. So the answer is yes.
That's right. Really, you know, keep in mind, too, that we will probably discuss this further during the voting process because I have a funny feeling it will come up. So, but let's have Dooley and Carol, and please be quick because we really do need to move on. It's unfair to the other departments that are here who have been waiting.
This is a request for information looking toward our voting meetings. Could you revise your page request so that the total will be the less 7,000 that you mentioned?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Carol?
I'm just trying to understand how, if this was in the 2008 budget, originally at 198,000, and then in the modified budget at 46,000, why we'd have zero in the base budget. If we had a base budget last year that gave them $46,595, why that wouldn't be that plus 3% wouldn't be their base now?
It was never given to them as target funding. It was only given to them as one-time or multi-year funding.
Okay. Thank you.
Actually, let me just clarify that we didn't receive any funding in 2007. I'm sorry. You're right, in 2008.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Julia. Okay, and now we have Diane to talk about employment and training.
You betcha. I'm going to keep it brief as well. I have three primary messages tonight representing the One Stop Center at Tompkins Workforce New York. The first is about performance, the second is about the labor market, and the third is about collaborations, cost savings, and aggressive grant writing that we're doing. The first one is performance. At the last PDEC meeting, the committee asked us to share some of our performance and what we're doing right now. I wanted to let you know for the second year in a row, we have met or exceeded federal and state performance guidelines. This is a thrill for us, actually, because with this comes either additional incentive money and no sanctions. In the past 3 or 4 years, we have been at the level where we may have needed some extra assistance and so on, but we are flying now. And a lot of that has to do with the state, with the WIB guidance, with the staffing that we have, and the fact that we really understand the performance and what's expected of us. There are several different areas that we're perform levels on, and the one is the number of customers we see. This past year, we saw 2,626 adults, 2,626 adults, 108 youth on a very intensive level, and 126 TANF youth that we help with summer youth employment. 101 participants were involved in training and skill development, which means that they were actively paid and supported during the time that they were unemployed to either get additional credentials or to go back to school or to finish up some training that they have already previously started. 166%, which this is very difficult to explain on a short-term basis, but 166% were either placed in education or employment, attained a degree or certificate, or gained in literacy and numeracy gains in our youth program. That's outstanding. That's the best in the state. We're extremely proud of the youth program and what they've done, and those four staff are really the people who should be congratulated for that. With the adult and dislocated program, our entered employment rate is 121%. The retention and the average earnings are evaluated at various times of the year because it's either the before, the during, or the after the program. The before the program is we look at what people were earned and so on. The during is what we did with them while they were involved in the program, and the after is were they actually entered into an employment situation for 3, 6, or 9 months, and did they make more money during that time. Again, I guess the bottom line is that we've either met or exceeded the performance expectations, and a lot of that has to do with the federal and state guidelines and the fact that the funding is strong, and we know that it needs to be strong in this kind of a labor market. It's been alluded to many times here is that we're unique in this region. We have the lowest unemployment rate in New York State. It's been averaging for the past 2 years at a 3.3%. However, in July, it jumped up to 4.6%. That's significant. It's the first time it's been significant in 2 years. That can translate to us as 500 additional customers who need our time and our attention, support, and additional training. We have had modest but steady growth in the program. We've been able to, with incentive money, been able to reinvest into the program for computer technology, additional staffing, additional program enhancement, and so on. So at this point, the budget request that you have is minimal that we need in order to get by. Our kind of our mantra over the past couple of years has been eliminate and innovate. And it's been something that we've said on an ongoing basis. We're consistently looking at our program to see if there's ways or things that we can eliminate to do cost savings. The other is that we're looking to innovate. We're seen as kind of a threshold in the state and are pretty regularly tapped into for ideas, suggestions, and so on. Again, that shows that we're not doing duplicative service in the state of New York, but we really want to use the technology. We want to be innovative, and we want to do online services more so, and we need our staff to be able to do that. The last thing I want to say is there's been a lot of significant work in industry-specific areas. Julia and others have mentioned that the tourism hospitality industries, we have a large initiative that we're just kicking off now in education, manufacturing, healthcare, technology, and the green industry. We really want to see those continue to grow and to make sure that this workforce investment area is as strong as it needs to be. We have written 7 grants this year with partner agencies. We know that some of those grants will come through. We don't know when those are going to come through. The feds have been very slow in releasing funds as well as telling us when RFPs are going to be awarded. We know that we'll recapture some of the funding that we're requesting. We just don't have those secured amounts. And in order for us to get started, our program year already started July 1 and so on, and we needed to be able to continue for the next 6 months. So we can't be successful without the WIB. We know that. We need their support. We need their guidance. We need that strategic thinking. And then that frees us up in our hands to be able to do real core work with customers. The other partner staff, the 11 partners, TCAD, the Empire Zones, the Chamber, the colleges, and the staff really need your support and your guidance at this particular time. It's a busy time, and it's a time to invest.
Thank you.
Be happy to take questions.
Any questions for Diane? It's a very concise presentation. All right. Okay, thank you. All right. At this point, we only have 2 more agencies to present, so I think we should just continue unless people want to take a break. You want to take a break? Who votes for a break? Okay, we will continue now. No votes. All right. So, Ken, come on up.
Ken's going to be fast.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm not sure that I should do this because, you did get it ahead of time. I think you got it 3 hours ahead of time. But it's actually very simple. It's up and down and thank you. And I'll show you how to read it in a minute. But the up part is basically participant numbers are up, offerings are up. I'm sure the first page of that has a map of the county with offerings throughout the county. I thought it would be interesting for you all to see just the sheer number of things that are offered throughout the entire county. The thing that I really wanted to share on the upside is the volunteer numbers are up. We've basically increased, full-time equivalents of volunteers in the last 2 years have gone up, or this past year have gone up another 2 years. So we have basically, among the 1,600 volunteers we have working with us, they donate a total of about 37 years of time, full-time equivalents. We also have another 10 full-time equivalents of work-study students we work with from throughout the county, both from TC3, from IC, and from Cornell. And combined, that's 47 years of full-time equivalents of volunteer and work-study time, which is about as much as we have in terms of staff. So we basically double our staff through the use of volunteers and full-time equivalents. The downside is our costs. And I was looking at numbers over the last 5 years. Our technology costs everybody's technology costs have dropped per unit. Ours have gone down. Our total costs have gone down in technology by well over half. But we've also increased our staff size by 50%. So another one which is down, and maybe it's because we've increased staff size so much that they can heat the building themselves, but our energy costs, our utility costs, are actually down over the last 5 years, even with the more than doubling of natural gas prices. And the third one that's down is administrative costs. Our administrative costs, actually the full-time equivalents of administration, have gone down over 20% in the last 5 years. And that's even with this increase in staff and program staff. So we've really worked hard to steward the county's money. We'll continue to do so. The result of this, if you add in $1.4 million worth of volunteer time, our budget would be roughly $5.5 million. And so that's roughly an 8-to-1 leveraging of the county's money. So what we're asking for in our OTR is if we did the numbers on the 3.6% cost of living adjustment for the entire payroll, it'd be over $75,000, and we're asking for about a third of that. So, the third thing I wanted to say is thank you, because really our support, I mean your support over the last 5 years has been tremendous, and I really do appreciate the effort that you've put into cooperative extension. Thank you.
Any questions for Ken? Will.
Ken, thank you for giving this up.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you could just expand a little bit on this chart. I was trying to make sense of this.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, and I meant to do that. Thank you. The way this chart is set up, and this is now the fifth year we've done this, so in fact, for many of you, it's probably getting quite boring. Not that charts are ever boring for anybody. Tables are just, numbers are great, aren't they? Okay. What we've done is the first page after the table is an introduction to the table and explains what's in there. The next page is basically all the different programs that are behind each of these lines, each of these program lines on the chart itself. And then you'll notice on the chart there are footnotes for the different columns. And the green columns, for example, have a green footnoted page. So every footnote in the green column is basically explained on the green footnoted page. The blue is for the blue, and the yellow is for the yellow. And what we've tried to do is to be quite conservative with the numbers. I'm happy to be challenged with those numbers. It's always interesting working on this chart each year. I find myself staying up late at night working on this, not just because I have to. It's actually quite interesting going through the process. But I'm always interested in getting more feedback from you. If you happen to see a figure in here that you disagree with, please let me know. I mean, the aim of this is actually to have everything be so conservative that if you disagree with it, you're disagreeing with it because it's too low, not because it's too high. So is that explained enough, Bill?
Thank you.
Carol.
Yeah, could you explain? Did you say the staff has gone up 50% in what period of time? And can you talk a little bit about
in the last five years?
Can you talk a little bit about why and programs, the impact on program?
The programming has deepened in many cases. It really hasn't widened. It's deepened. We offer more programs. There's a lot more youth development work that goes on. There's a lot more work going on in parenting. There's a lot more work going on in agriculture. Local food's gone up. We're moving in a lot more work with energy efficiency.
I assume that the volunteer component that you talked about, which is amazing, has probably gone up commensurate with that?
In the last five years, it's gone up from it was about 40,000 hours 4 or 5 years ago, and it's now up to 74,000 hours. So,
if you look at our big book, page 116, our appropriation has only just sort of bumped up a little at a time. So, it only goes back a couple of years, but. So the staff go up at 50%. Is that grants and contracts? How does that? Where do you get the funding for that?
We just pay them less. That's actually one of the things that I was. One of the things that we have been able to do is really work hard to increase staff salaries on the frontline staff over this time. So they've actually their salaries have gone up substantially over the cost of living in the last 5 years. Yes, we've increased grants and contracts substantially. Yeah.
Who is after Mark? Is there anybody? All right, Dooley.
What's your secret about getting energy costs down in that building?
I think I really do. I mean, there are times upstairs we don't have to have it. In the wintertime, we hardly have the heat on upstairs. With the number of people up there and the heat rising from down below, it's we did add insulation. We did add insulation. We do a lot. We're using, you know, we exhaust the heat in the summertime at night. Open the windows. We walk in the morning and it's 65 degrees and it stays cool during the day in the summer. And in the winter, no, I'm a bit serious about the body heat. We do. Anybody who's been in that building during the day and seen just the way we pack people in knows that we probably could heat the whole building with just body heat.
Tell them how you generate light, Kent.
Now, I can vouch for him. Having gotten the tour as one of my orientations, COFA maybe gives them a run for their money, but the two of you could compare notes.
All right, any other questions or comments for Ken? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, and then our last agency for the day, Soil Water Conservation District. Craig, how are you doing? All right. I'm sorry, do people want me to read out the pages? You do? Okay, all right. 255 in the big book and 53 in the OTR pages.
This being the last one, congratulations.
I know, I should have asked that.
It's good that you caught up, Nate.
All right, so.
The first thing I would like to touch on is I hope you all got this funding programs and projects that I sent to the county administrator's office. Just to give you an idea of how many grants we have out there, the funding that we're bringing in to the county, not only for ourselves but for other county agencies, like the $92,000 grant for County Highway for the sweeper vacuum truck. I was approached by Bill Sesney, asked if I could write a grant for him to get some funding for that, which we did. That total $92,000 has been paid to the county towards that truck. But the bottom line is I came up with a total state funding of over $2 million, and then we added in the federal funding that comes through the office, which was another $247,000, so for a total of about $2.3 million. And I think the important part of that is that a lot of these projects are actual projects on the ground for the environment, and contractors are hired, local businesses sell materials for these projects, so there is a huge multiplier effect on those dollars when you step back and really think about them. I guess I'll get right to the request, because the first OTR is really the most important one that I'm sure you've got questions about and that we need to discuss. As I said in the write-up, NRCS traditionally had paid most of our office space. They're going through audits and upheaval in their departments, and it's been deemed that they can no longer do that. And so districts, counties have to find a way to accommodate their soil and water districts. Under their agreement for the space we're in right now, they sent us a draft operational agreement. It would within 3 years, it would be almost $40,000. To Steve Witcher's credit, he found some other alternative space that I think would be very good for us, would suit our needs tremendously at a much lower rate. The problem we're having right now is with the federal people. Because Steve, and we would like the NRCS people to come with us to that space. There's room for all of us. That way they could pay their part of the rent, which they would be willing to do, and it would be a huge savings to them. But we're having a real hard problem moving them off the spot and getting some kind of commitment from them. And I know Steve said until this was resolved, he wouldn't advise funding this. I know Steve was working on it some today. I don't know if you have any got any response.
I spoke with Congressman Curry's office and waiting for Senator Schumer's office to respond. But essentially what's happened is NRCS at the, you know, at the federal level in Washington is saying, well, our procedures are that it takes about 18 months to do a market value survey, and so therefore we can't move our site until we have the market value survey. And my comment back was, well, it's kind of interesting considering that you're paying over market for the place that you're in. You know, I mean, this is nonsense. So we could move them into this new space, which happens to be the same building as Board of Elections is in for their machines. We got one heck of a nice deal there. And we would save everybody money. It would work. It would save the taxpayers money at the federal level and the local level. Instead, what we're being faced with is some bureaucrat someplace saying, it's my power and I'm not giving it up. What I am working on right now is trying to convince NRCS to simply cancel their lease. They have a 120-day out, and there's no reason why they can't do that, and then the county could pick up the lease for the 18 months that it takes the federal government to figure out that we're right, and then they can make up the money on the back end. But I have to be able to find somebody that has some reason at the federal level that seems to be in short supply right now.
I mean, the bottom line is the space that we're in right now, the total lease is about $65,000, and the lease where Steve is proposing would be
40 to 35? 40, 44 by the time you're done.
Yeah, but it would be much, much less.
Martha?
So, what do we do?
We're negotiating. Hold your breath. Some of these things come down to the last minute. We'll get there.
Okay. And the other OTR is the cost of living adjustment.
Steve did recommend half of the second OTR, which we appreciate, which would go towards salaries increases. Which, you know, very appreciative that he recommends that.
Martha?
Yeah, I'm just noticing that the library, you asked for and you granted 3.5% cost of living, cooperative extension, 3.6% cost of living. Any reason
The reason here was that we have never funded 100% of their salaries nor 100% of their salary increases. So this would be unusual. If there's a different circumstance, perfectly willing to listen, but I didn't hear anything different, so I cut them back by half.
Okay. Do it.
I wonder why you didn't recommend at least funding rental space for them at the amount you assume we would charge.
That could be coming down the pike.
But wouldn't it be sensible to put it in at that level at this point for our purposes of keeping track of how much money we've committed?
I can do that. It's going to be one-time money or two-year money. It won't be target money. So it's not a levy issue. It's going to be a fund balance issue. And I can get you that estimate.
Why would it not be target?
Because NRCS is currently paying $65,000, and I'm trying to negotiate if we get two-thirds, the rent reduced by a third, how do we split that? How about if the county then, or the soil and water then doesn't have to pay anything for the first contract period? If their issue is that they can't afford $65,000 a year, if we present them with better space at $45,000 a year, then they've accomplished their goal. So why would we have to contribute any money?
Let's let them negotiate.
Okay, Steve.
All right, any other questions or comments for Craig? Seeing none, thanks, Craig.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and Mike, and then we'll turn it back to Norma for further updates on the budget.
I just wondered a quick question for Steve. We're getting a lot of requests because of increased gas prices. Should we be thinking that if gas drops, like this money will still be out there in the budget? And will there be a mechanism to recover that?
Actually, if you look at our recommendations, they were requesting, everyone was requesting it somewhere around the 40-50% level, and we reduced them all down to around 20% because we thought it was a bubble, and we didn't think that it was intelligent to put that much money in as target. Of course, after last year's TCAP budget, we weren't highly confident. So. But we did do that.
Cool. Nice.
All right. So, Norma, you had a few more updates on the budget?
That's another reason to keep our fund balance up, because we'll probably get additional fuel requests.
That's right.
I just want to let you know that we talked to the finance department. It's just so many people go on vacation this summer, it's hard to catch everyone, but we realized that the payments in lieu of taxes, we were able to increase the unallocated revenues on an ongoing basis by about $80,000. So right now, coming into your voting meetings, we're at 2.55% rather than 2.77 as we started. So that was pretty good news. With the changes that we made in probation's budget, using some fund balance, it did drop us slightly below $1 million in fund balance right now. The audit committee will be meeting tomorrow. We'll get a better idea of what the actual fund balance is. And then I'll be able to give you a new fund balance report as well as the target calculations that Julie had asked for. So that's where that is right now.
Okay. You want to show them the big...
You had several things put on your desk before the meeting, since we have just a second to just let you know. You should have a blue piece of paper. That's the new capital report. That's been modified. First of all, taking some of those lines out, hopefully that cleared it up a bit, took some of those sums, because where you see a negative, it's a revenue. Also, it's on the road program. I double-checked those.
Where does this go?
This will go in your capital book.
All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm, you're welcome. The road program, we had in 2009, we're estimating debt service at $171,086. And you'll see in 2010, we've modified that number to, added a $201. It was high because of the changes in that debt service payment out years. Also, you'll see, I'm just going to quickly tell you what's changed from the last time we talked about this.
Sure.
On the second page, if you flip this over and it says 20-year capital and debt program under lease for the public safety communications, we had taken all of the revenue out for SWIN funding, and we don't believe that that's really realistic. We don't know what's going to happen with that, so we have estimated some revenue in 2010 and out to 2016, because we shouldn't not expect any funding from that. It's just we don't have any set agreements at this point. And I think that's the only change. Those are the only major changes on that report.
Thanks. Quick question. The white sheet you gave us with the dotted lines on it on the 8th, my guess is these numbers look pretty similar.
Yes, only the ones that I told you changed.
So the 916 replaces this entirely?
Yep.
Okay.
Other questions? I'm sorry, I lost track here.
Do you have an extra sheet?
The blue one?
Sure.
I don't have two. There are two pages.
All right, Carol, did you have your hand up?
It's not on the capital budget, it's a general question on the budget.
That's fine. Does anybody have any questions about the capital budget? No? Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
On the budget in general, if I'm the only one who doesn't understand this, then I suppose we can take this later at the risk of sounding like I don't understand, but with the assumption that our public should be able to understand the budget as well.
Sure.
Some of the departments have given us budgets that show us pretty clearly, I think, what their federal and state revenues and expenses are, and some don't indicate that. Is there a reason in the budget that some of them do and some of them don't, or is that the style that certain departments used? And in any case, can we get a summary sheet or summary sheets that would show us, the work program showed it very clearly, and the soil and water conservation program budget of the few we heard tonight didn't show that. And it just doesn't give us a full sense of what dollars are passing through and coming to the community for all the programs.
Yeah, breaking down the accounts are structured in Panamanian and in our financial system to show which is state aid, what's federal aid. And, we can run a summary of what departments have. Is that what you're...
Well, I think there's a little confusion in that you were referencing some agencies where we do not have their budgets. So I wonder if that's part of what the issue is.
Not departments. You're talking agencies.
Yeah, agencies.
We don't have their staff numbers. We don't have their budgets.
No, we don't have any information for agencies.
Okay.
We could ask for it.
Yeah.
Of course we could. I am curious. It helps to evaluate it if we know the context of the request to us in the context of their bigger budget.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
And then you printed out this also.
Mm-hmm. It's so much better on the
paper. You can actually read it. Huh? So, Nora, the request was for the local share monies and to be done on the same scale. So that's what was done. And actually, I think it's one of the clearest ones I've ever seen, so it's kind of nice.
Nice job.
Thanks, Norma. I want to really thank you, because I wasn't entirely clear on what I wanted on this, and you went over it several times, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah.
Okay, Frank?
Can I ask a question of David for a moment?
Sure.
Dave, we've been treated to that accounting accrual business where we have to inventory all county properties and value them for the state. Remember that situation? Can you say where we are with that and if there's any hidden costs associated with that that we're not addressing in 2008 or 2009?
Well, the main impact on all that was it raised the cost of the financial audit probably by 15% ongoing forward, because it's added another layer of investigation. But so that's built into our operating cost now.
So it's approximately 15% a year?
Yeah.
Thank you, I think.
Okay, anything else? All right, looks like we're done. Thank you very much, everyone.
Norma?
Yes?
Do you have the chart already done by grouping things by the department?